And now Adam has to sing the song again, even though he already sang it tonight. Uh-oh.
I got it this time. I drank enough.
I'm drank enough.
I got it. Are you recording?
Yep.
Yep.
I started too high.
Yeah, you're not gonna be able to go. Uh-oh.
Here comes theoretical listeners. He went lower.
Never wouldn't. The podcast where I, Adam Lover, make my friends
Eric
and Katie
listen to, wait, watch and discuss season one of the hit WB teen/family drama from the early 2000s, Everwood. My name is Adam Lover. I know I already said that. We are recording our second episode in one night, and I have drank wine.
Yes.
And this tonight's episode of Everwood Never Wouldn't is brought to you by Gino Chang's Pizza.
Oh, he does wonders with that crust.
Oh, it's so great.
Hell yes. I want to know.
Okay.
How
getting down to it.
Y'all feel about season one, episode three, Friendly Fire.
Friendly Fire. Why was it called Friendly
That's
Fire?
That's what I've been trying to think about.
I didn't think about it until right now.
Because the storylines are all about friends and trying to make friends and navigating new friendships.
But Friendly Fire.
Like,
because people get caught in the crossfire between friends.
Yeah, Andy in the diner with his speech there, trying to do good for his friend, but doing them harm.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
All right. Seems. I don't know about this title. You know what, number one?
Stealing
title
from
rating,
each other.
One. 1 out of 5.
No, that can't be a 1. It's at least a 3.
It's
no.
better than the last one where it's just like, let's take a phrase from the show that they say.
I don't like this title. No, I disagree with this
Friendly
title.
Friendly Fire. It's about making friends and then about people saying things and doing things that hurt their friends and people who they're trying to be friends with. It's Friendly Fire is a perfect
it's
title.
A great title.
5 stars. No. My name's Adam Lover and I love Everwood.
I disagree, but okay.
We
I
know
mean,
you
I
do.
Agree that you love Everwood, but I disagree about the title.
What
Not
would you
impressed.
Have
thought?
KT, I give you 10 seconds. Come up with a better title.
Oh, yeah, 10 seconds. I'll be able to come up with a better title. You know how good I am at brief comedy or brief brevity.
It's not about
brief
comedy.
Brevity.
It's about capturing the thematic elements of the episode.
Listen, you think right, I was watching that episode?
Let's move on from the episode title, which I think we can all agree, all the sane people on this Discord call can agree, is perfect.
Yep.
What did y'all think about the episode? This is the episode. This is an episode where we've got Andy in the diner. By the way, this is so, I on a personal note, I've shared that, you know, I lived in Colorado for several years. And when I moved there, it was like, I was very aware of the fact that some of my favorite shows had connections there. Mm-hmm. Everwood took place in Colorado.
Community
took place in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
The Office, Michael Scott left the show and moved to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And now, at this point in my life, 3-4 days before I moved to Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. I'm watching season 1, episode 3 of Everwood, and Andy says to Nina in the diner, after she shouts an order for food to the kitchen, he says, where's the kitchen in Pittsburgh? So that is, you know, it's things
that's
like this
weird.
Make me believe in God. Just crossed it off the list now.
Yep.
Where's the kitchen in Pittsburgh? I take notes on every episode.
Oh, nice.
So Andy's in the diner.
Yep.
Yes.
We discover, we learn from Nina when the local ladies try to throw her a baby shower that this is not her baby.
Mm-hmm.
She is carrying it for somebody else. And it is, this takes the town by storm.
Right. What a scandal.
In 2002.
In rural Colorado.
Surrogacy is apparently a controversial issue.
Which really, that was like, honestly, so if we're talking about the rating of the experience of watching the show, this time I've spent a lot of confusing moments. Like that's...
You expended a lot of energy feeling confused.
Yes.
Why is this show treating, and having its characters named treating
right.
this issue as an issue.
Right.
Like that it doesn't seem right. My answer is I don't know. Like
yeah,
I think that there are conservative enough people and enough conservative enough people in the United States and maybe globally, I don't know, who have wariness around science and medicine around reproductive health, right? And surrogacy, who might view it as unnatural. Don't play God. And I will say that it does seem in this for Everwood's purposes to be maybe a bit exaggerated and amplified for the purposes of storytelling.
Well, there was a moment I think it was the second time where they were withholding money or like withholding, like the customers were upset the second time. That all of a sudden I wondered if I was in a different genre of show because it almost felt like an SNL skit. Like the first interaction happened and Treat Williams did a speech. And then the second interaction happened and it was like the opposite. And she's like, now I have to do another speech. It was almost like a comedy thing. Like there are little funny moments, but it was so,
especially because it was the same people.
Right. It was all the same customers.
In the same order.
The same guy.
The show is willing to kind of do these broad things in the interest of kind of telling its story in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but what the fuck is the story? Like, I don't understand. This one, I'm not sure I can understand. I just still don't understand it.
I wonder if whoever was involved with, like, writing this part of it had an experience like this,
wondered,
knew someone, or maybe they're...
Because I don't remember, you know. I mean, okay, how old was that? I was a grown-up in early... I mean, like a young grown-up, but I wasn't a child in early 2000s, right?
You would have been about 20 when this episode
came
out.
Okay, so like, I don't remember being in college or being that age at all and ever hearing like surrogacy. Oh, goodness. Like, I didn't even remember that being a controversy at all.
I don't think it's ever something that had such a national stage that you would be aware of it.
It's so odd. I could not wrap my head around it. I would not be surprised.
I grew up in a rural place. I would not be surprised that people who have been involved on one side or other of the issue have had very negative interactions with people.
In general, across the country, everyone would have the same perception of the show. Because that's what I cannot understand it.
I'm not sure about that. I think that they were drawing on real stories and experiences, but I will say that even then, like, it's not like I watched this episode and thought to myself, oh, that's a really like common controversy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think even then it was kind of like I furrowed my eyebrow at this then. Like interesting, right? And I think that they are doing that because they need to, well, you know, I think they're doubling down on what kind of town is Everwood. It is very conservative, can be very mm-hmm. reactionary against things. And in the writer's defense, right, like that the logic of this is natural, this is unnatural.
Right. That's totally a thing.
That is very totally prevalent mm-hmm. in a lot of conservative people. And so, like, and you know, I think that they were, you know, making some connections. Like they had to have, you know, Nina as this pregnant, functionally single mother. And they needed, I think that they were weaving together, like, okay, well, what's a way to show that Andy is, which I loved while we were watching, right, in that first scene in the diner.
Yeah.
KT, you were, or I think it was you, KT, who said, like, oh, here we go. Like, Andy has to be the
yes.
hero.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When he, and in that scene, he does. He stands yep. up and he gives a speech right. against Dr. Abbott, who's like, mm-hmm. Dr. Abbott is clearly just like playing to
right.
the, what he knows is the conservative culture. He's
trying
of the
to
town.
Read the room. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And so Andy gets to be the hero. But what I love is that in the next scene,
yeah, mm-hmm. he really fucks
does,
up.
Like, he's fucked up and, right. he, and he doesn't understand the boundaries of like what's appropriate to share and what's not, and he fucks up.
Okay, everybody, what's going on? Yesterday you're treating me like George Bailey at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, and today I'm the monkey from Outbreak.
She's 55, Nina.
55? Who's 55?
The woman that Nina's having the baby for. She came into the drugstore last night.
55? That's just wrong.
If God wanted 55-year-old women to have babies, he would have given us lifetime warranties on our you-know-whats. Look, she's really...
And yet we smile when we hear that a 70-year-old man just became a father for the first time. Why is that?
I've got this one, Andy.
If biology allows a man to become a father until the day he dies, why should a woman have to give up that dream at the age of 45?
But she's 55. It's
not natural, Doc.
Well, who's to say what's natural? All species adapt. Female dogs have been known to nurse orphan kittens. Is that natural?
That's got to be a New York City dog. Out here, a dog knows he's a dog.
Look, everybody, we really don't
no,
need
no, no,
to...
No. I admit, when I first saw the mother of the child, I thought she was too old to become a parent for the first time. But today I learned from Nina just how badly that woman wants a family. And I don't think the qualifications for parenthood should have anything to do with age. What's so unnatural about wanting a family? To me, what's unnatural is not wanting one. And let's not forget about Nina. If she can use this money to keep her husband home a few more weeks a year, then she hasn't just helped to create a family. She's helped to save her own. And by that, I mean to say...
Andy, please. God.
I think that goes back to, like, our conversation after the pilot about Andy and like, is he supposed to be flawed or not? Like,
right.
This episode really makes it clear. Like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Andy is really flawed. He's thoughtless. He doesn't really think about the ramifications of things for other people.
Yeah.
And there you have it. I can't really, you know, I'm not really informed about the idea of like how controversial. Right.
I also wonder too, like it might be colored by like how nowadays, like so many of the like different instances of media we consume are so politicized. Like they like so use like these hot button things and really push them and like dry, like play with them or explore them or whatever. Like if we see something like that, we're like, oh, this must be something that someone's trying to work through to deliver their message or whatever, or, you know, like convince people or whatever, you know, whether it's Black Lives Matter or, you know, one side or the other, even like abortion or something like that. Like, I don't know.
And yeah, no, 100%. And at the time, right. And I think this does speak to this episode starts to speak to that question of, you know, I'd read the quote that kind of described the show as groundbreaking. And I think that this is the kind of the turtle peeking its head out of the shell of like what Everwood is trying to do and be, right? Because it was kind of marketed as a companion piece to Seventh Heaven, right? That was kind of, I think it was a lead in to Seventh Heaven. And exploring even just this in the third episode, right? Exploring ideas around reproductive health and reproductive agency and kind of showing, you know, and in this way that I think is really, I like it that like the ultimate kind of logic of it and the moral of the episode is, can the men just sit down and shut up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Nina, like, is like, what, like, says to Dr. Abbott in that first scene, like, what do you, or no, says to Dr. Brown, and he's like, you shouldn't stand up in a chair. She's like,
right.
What do you know about being pregnant?
Like, yeah.
Let me stand up. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when like the two men are arguing uh-huh. about who's going to be the doctor, and she's
just
like,
get the fuck out.
Could you just leave?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's pretty mm-hmm. evolved. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I like that, especially for its time.
Yeah.
And ultimately it's an argument for reproductive agency, right? This woman mm-hmm. has
it's
a right
definitely
to
delivering the right message.
Yeah. So, but you know, it is confusing though. Like now.
Yeah, but she didn't say anything. I'm sorry. I will step in here as somebody who has a female body. Like, she didn't really get to say anything except for that one speech. Every other thing was her having labor and then she's in the bed and the men just keep talking and then they have their little comedic routine walking out. It's not really, I don't think it's really commenting on the men sitting. I don't know. They're still there. They're still doing their thing. And she's just like, I just gave birth. Bye. Like, we can read into it and say that. And I think that is great. I like that interpretation, but I don't know if that's actually true. She 100%. Still is not really like a character, I feel like. She's just the pregnant wife of, oh, the man in her life isn't there, so everything she's doing is about, like, trying to get this. I mean, it's even brought up as, oh, you shouldn't have brought that up, but mm-hmm. she misses her husband, and he's, oh, but maybe she likes him. I mean, obviously, that's what's being set up. I don't think she's much of a character yet.
It's nothing compared to, like, shows like Fleabag these days mm-hmm. that like have amazing dialogue and monologues right. about women and pregnancy. Like the show, yeah, you're right. It doesn't really have that in yeah. the short kind of broad strokes that the episode kind of deals with. It yeah. is provisional at best.
But I did like him making a fool of himself because the thing that I liked about it is not even like, oh, that he made a fool of himself. It's the fact that he did it successfully the first time, and so he thought he was well within his right mm-hmm. to do it again.
And ignored her clear
yes,
messaging to him to stop.
Yeah.
They kept on talking over her.
Right.
Multiple
but she
times.
Didn't get really a chance to be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like,
no.
Right? Like, I don't think there was really
they had her moment reacting to it, and she was yes. clearly upset.
And
but
she
yeah.
left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I crazy? Like, she didn't get a moment where she was like, that was not cool, like, you need to let me talk for myself, like, what, right?
Yeah.
There was no
I think that they cut off that moment in favor of, oh, she's pregnant, she needs somebody to take her to the hospital, and so it yeah. becomes this moment of urgency instead of that. And
yeah,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
I would have I 100% would have liked to see that dialogue, because I think it would have gone a long way toward establishing Nina as her own character,
yeah,
and not just somebody who exists in reaction mm-hmm. to
right.
this
men.
Conservative town, this
and
doctor,
men.
That doctor,
a bunch of
these
dudes.
Men.
Her missing yeah. husband.
Yes, 100%. Everything is defined
her
by
missing
that.
Child,
that's why
apparently.
I'm not really that impressed by that, because it didn't. He didn't really get, I don't know, educated. I mean, he was educating, right. and then he made a little mistake, and then he was still just the lead guy. It's still okay. And he
still got to deliver a baby
right.
in the donut shop.
And I get it's about him. I'm not trying to, I'm definitely not trying to be like, oh, this show should have been about feminism. Like, but I just disagree with the whole, like, oh, yeah, well, this is definitely good for the women. Because, like, it's great if you're talking about theoretically doing things for women, but if you don't let the women do the job, like, that's not helping at all.
I think that, like, 100% would be a better episode if they had, like, I wish they would have been able to pull off, maybe they could have cut down on all of the, like, footage of Andy walking through
in the boat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, like because, like, I
but
think
man,
that that's
I
where,
loved that too.
That was such
that
a
was
great
so
scene.
Wonderful.
I mean,
love
that
scene.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, that would have been the place to put it is before he went out to the woods mm-hmm. to have a scene where
yeah.
he really, where Nina tells him, like, you you know, I thought I could trust you. I thought that you were a breath of fresh air mm-hmm. in this town, but ultimately you were just a flip side of it in terms of trying to control me and my voice. Mm-hmm. And I don't appreciate it. And then that yeah. would have been a great mm-hmm. impetus for yeah. him to like
more, yeah.
go out onto the lake. Make it and then it could have been more,
yeah.
it could have been more about like, because even then, like his dialogue, he's screaming out to Julia, to his dead wife, is yeah. like, you took us here, this town, like you didn't meet the people suck. The real point of that scene
yeah.
should have been, I suck.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just as bad as they are.
Yeah.
And that would have been, like in 2020s Everwood, that's yes. the kind of writing that like I would want.
I like that. I like that a lot because I do, he obviously is in the right, like his mind is in the right place. He's trying to be like, we aren't the people to tell her what to think. But it's just so funny that he stands like mm-hmm. in the context of being in 2020, it was weird to watch that. Like as me, like yep. weird to watch yep. that and be like, listen, this little lady, I'm going to give two speeches for her. And here we go. And that's why it was only great when it was like, oh shit, maybe I should have stopped at one. Like that's, mm-hmm. we need each other to defend each other. That's great. I love people defending each other, whoever it is, whether it was another woman, whether it's man, whatever. It's just mm-hmm. like, you know,
yep.
it's better if it ended more like, oh, wait a second, I don't always have to do this. Like, it's not, I really liked that. I thought that they did that well, where he realized, oh, wait a second.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But you said that you liked like his face.
Acting. Yes. That was your favorite acting moment yeah, of his or whatever.
Yeah, it was, right? That was where it was my favorite face, right? That moment yes. where he was like, oh.
Well, and I love his line, his last line in that scene is like, by that, I mean to say,
yes, mm-hmm.
like, I have to like clarify because he has the privilege of like, mm-hmm. look, I should be able to clarify.
Yes.
And he's like, no, shut up.
Yeah.
yeah. I love that moment.
Yes.
I absolutely love
it. It was really good.
And then in that scene, the old guy talking about must be a New York City dog.
Oh, I love
fuck here, that never guy, but also yeah. that guy's awesome.
Dog knows he's a dog.
Oh my God. That was so good. Like the townsfolk, I mean, I don't know, whoever cast the townsfolk, right? Like obviously the people who write the show are not small town conservative people. They're trying to point out like, look at, you know,
look I'm at sorry, these
idiots. I don't mean to be mean. Yeah. It's just, yeah, oh, yeah, like look at their face. All of them were like, all they were just processing everything all the time. They were like Mr. Bean faces all over the place. Like they just didn't know how to,
mm-hmm.
and they were so easily swayed. Like both right. are right. Yes. Oh,
they
yes.
clapped at both speeches.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It was, that was interesting. I don't know what that means. I don't want to make fun of everyone from small towns or anything.
No, no. Well, I think
yes,
I think,
you
I,
do.
I don't. I don't. I'm from a small town. So are you. You're wonderful. I will say
another note that I was going to make is that I think that the writers might have been drawing on the fact that Colorado Springs, for example, is a town in Colorado that is known for
ultra
being
conservative.
Very, very conservative.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so like and so there Colorado very much in my experience, my understanding, is like can be a very purple state.
Yeah. Mm, totally.
Where like there it can be
heavily
can be
red very, and heavily blue yep. areas. Mm. Yeah, totally. I've heard
and
that
so
too.
I think they're kind of drawing on that, trying to create Everwood as a place that is, yeah, like, you know, a few hours from Denver, maybe a few hours from Boulder, might be kind of a stand-in for a place like Colorado Springs.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I say that as somebody, I've never been to Colorado Springs. I
no,
just
I've heard the same thing. It's notorious yeah. for being heavily conservative.
Interesting.
So it's interesting, right? We have that storyline. We have, you know, Andy and Dr. Abbott. Dr. Abbott's kind of an asshole trying to, like, just kind of preach to the mm-hmm. conservative voices in town saying that, like, well, you know, we deserve to know. And I will say I hate it.
Ugh, man.
It's shitty. But I think that the writing tries to couch that in the fact that he was Nina's doctor mm-hmm. and he's like hurt
yeah.
that she wouldn't have told him that. Right. And I think that is really kind of interesting.
I thought it was mostly coming from a place where this character has been losing a lot of control, a lot of respect in the community because his patients are leaving him. And so he's trying to go, hey, everybody, I'm one of you, like all of you. This is what we believe, really right? You know, and so like that's reading more the room, what I felt like what was he, happening there.
Saying what that, he wanted I them. Think that's, yeah, what he thinks he wanted to hear.
And then it didn't work. I think that's... Yeah.
I think that's more primary. I think that that's on a more, like, that's more relevant for sure. Yeah. I think that, like, a few different things are happening there, but I think that that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I do love his line to Andy. When Andy's like, is this seat taken? And he's like, oh, that doesn't work.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that. That was great.
I also, something that was jarring to me was Andy at the beginning of the pre-baby shower scene in the diner.
That was weird.
Criticizing the greasiness of the menu.
Yes.
For some reason, that did not seem in character to me.
Right. He's been eating pizza every hour on the hour since he moved here.
I think that's like totally an example of like, well, we've got this line. Somebody's going to say it. Like, it does seem like more of a Dr. Abbott line.
Totally. Yeah. He's like so homesy, like folksy.
I think he was
like
maybe
acting.
Just trying. I don't know. I guess I don't remember how he acted. He didn't seem angry about it. Yeah, I think he was being silly.
I think it was that he was saying it to
like
Nina, who works there.
Right. He's the staff.
Like, it's their responsibility for cleaning the things. Like, if he's saying it to someone else as they're eating there, it's a little different. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Which, like, and I don't know that this is intended by the writers, but like, I'm perfectly willing in like a death of an author kind of way to say like, hey, that is a perfect example of like, the show is like showing us Andy's not perfect. He can be kind of a dick.
Yeah.
You know, like that makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
But I think it was the last episode that Dr. Abbott kind of greets Andy with like the line, like, what's wrong? Like, didn't have time to take your dose of sarcasm this morning. And what's funny, right, about that is that like, I think Dr. Abbott seems to be far more of a sarcastic
person,
right?
Yeah.
So, like, in a sense, he's projecting onto Andy, but also I do think that, like, in a very real way, Andy and Harold.
Wait, who's Harold? Who's Harold?
Dr. Abbott. Harold Abbott.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm not good with names. Okay.
No, 100%. They never call him Harold anyway. Okay. Maybe his wife, the mayor. I think that Andy can be sarcastic. Maybe in those scenes we see Andy as being less sarcastic than Harold, but both are straight white men with enormous amounts of privilege and education.
Yep.
And who fancy and
positions of power.
Positions of power and who have a vested interest in kind of holding authority and respect. And so, you know, I think that seeing Andy like say a line like that, even with that big dumb smile on his face to Nina, you know, making fun of the greasiness of the menus, it's like, wait a minute. Like it's not played by the show as being this offensive moment.
No.
Yeah.
But we can kind of pick up on it as like, Andy, what the fuck is wrong with you? You think you're being so charming, but like, what?
I would like to rewatch it, like, because honestly, I'm having trouble remembering exactly how he acted that. To me, I didn't think it was as jerky. I thought he was just talking to
playful.
A friend. Right, yeah, playful
he
and talking to a friend.
He wasn't trying to insult it or anything, no, but the fact that you would say that to someone who works there, like, it just was weird.
But it's not her restaurant.
But she, like...
Yeah, you work there, but it's a job.
He doesn't know it
at that point?
He learns it, like, in that
scene. Is that
scene.
The one?
Right, that mama whatever the...
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like, I think that there's something to track there.
Yeah.
About Andy's privilege and charm, but also the way that he can be, totally thoughtless. And he takes up space. And this episode is a perfect example of that. He takes up space without really thinking about it. And that's Andy Brown for you. I'm looking at my notes. If there's anything else about Andy constantly talking over Nina, even when she comes and she's like, her water broke or whatever, she needs a ride.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's even a little bit there where he's like, keeps talking and she's like, Andy, I need a ride.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's happened twice. It's not Andy both times, but like that moment, was that earlier in this episode or was it the previous episode where somebody's trying to talk and somebody keeps, it's not sitcom-y. It's so,
well,
this
well, there
show
was
where the
last
little girl.
Episode, yeah. In the last episode, Delia was trying to tell Ephraim we're locked out.
Yeah.
And he's like, shut up. Like, and then he doesn't hear her until Amy and Dr. Abbott leave.
I was curious if it happened another time other than that, because it seems like a thing now. I wonder if they do it more.
Very possibly. I love that when Nina does come and Andy tells Walter Cunningham to watch Delia.
Yeah.
And he says, like, you know, he's like, I can't do that. I watch Oz tonight.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. This is the night I watch Oz.
And you watch Wizard of Oz.
He's like, that Oz scares me.
Yeah. That's so great. Me too. I love that.
That Oz scares me. That's so good.
Yeah. It was great.
So the other aspect of that storyline that I loved is, it's very nice that Ephraim gets to see his dad in action. And he asks him, like, so how many babies have you delivered?
Yeah, how many does that make it for you?
And he's like, this is my first. And that's Ephraim actually gets to experience this moment of, like, awe. Of, like, oh, shit, my dad is kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's those hands.
And then when she's, you know, recovering or whatever you do after giving birth, that Dr. Abbott shows up with apple cake.
Hello? Anybody home?
Come on in.
Hello there.
Dr. Abbott, what brings you by?
Rose baked her traditional apple cake for the birth.
Thought that was only for your patients.
No, it's for friends, too.
Thank you.
Good evening, Doctor.
Well, congratulations on your first doorstep delivery, as we like to say around here.
Thank you very much.
Though, if you want to break records, you'll have to top my delivery of Jane DeSeef's triplets in the women's hosiery aisle of the local Stop and Shop.
Just give me a few years.
It's for friends, too.
That was really cute.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
But then he also gives away near the end of the scene that he's trying to get her back as a patient.
Yeah.
Too, so. Right. He immediately goes back to just being domineering and argumentative. And she makes them both leave. But that moment of, like, it's friends, too, is very sweet. So,
yeah.
We've also got, I had to pause the episode to give you the heads up that this episode introduces Wendell, the quintessential, irrelevant, dorky, best, like, unlikely friend of the main character.
Uh-huh. Right, like, he should be the one that likes manga.
Absolutely. He should teach Ephraim about
manga.
Exactly.
The writers are desperate at this point. They need to introduce somebody who can kind of just make these connections. So, of course, this guy is, like, almost meta. He knows about the different friend groups in high school.
Wendell, this is the part where you shake my hand. If you're looking to get your picture up in her locker, you're going about it all wrong, dude. The whole school knows Amy worships at the Shrine of Coma Boy every weekend. If you want to break her of the habit, you're gonna need help.
I'm not yours.
I provide a service. One that you might find infinitely beneficial in your doomed, albeit noble, romantic pursuit.
What are you talking about?
You'll see, Brown. I'm just finishing your dossier. Give me some time to work out the finer details, and I'll call you with a plan.
I knew kids like that. I know that it's like a writing thing, but you know what's funny? I dated a guy like that.
You dated Wendell?
I dated Wendell. His name was Elliot. But he was like a 50-year-old man in a 16-year-old boy's body. He talked like a self-assured, charismatic, like, person, and all the kids hated him because he was like that. And I thought he was great.
Didn't use the word albeit, because I was always struck by Wendell's albeit.
I am positive that Elliot said albeit. Like, that's the thing. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So Wendell shows up and he just, like, immediately is talking to
out of nowhere.
Like, look, I can help you with your situation. Like, you need to connect with Amy in this other context, which is you should be the pianist for the dancers, for the Swan ballet dancers. And so that scene ends with, practice your Russian. Or no, that's on the phone later. When he calls, he somehow gets their number.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's the thing. Like, he knows all these things. He knows his number. He knows he's a great pianist. Like,
But there are weirdos like that. Like, he could find the information. The thing, this is what I'm saying. I don't think it's that unbelievable. That kid would go to the school secretary and charm the shit out of her and get the number of his friend that he's new. I'm telling you, like, there was a, that was like Elliot. He was friends with all the teachers. He was friends with all the grownups. He was friends with me, who's like an 80-year-old person in a young person's body. And now my body just feels like it's 80 years old. But like that, those people exist. That's why I'm sure that's where that writing, a tool came from. Like that story tool.
My favorite thing about this podcast so far is that like these moments where I try to lean into like, hey, yeah, this is totally something worth criticizing. I get it. And T is like, no, this is real.
Oh, well, it is. I mean,
that's so funny.
So I agree that it is silly because I have not met many people like that, but I know that they exist. His character design, I laughed at 100 times. I was laughing at his necklaces, his hair. He seems like to be wearing mascara, but I don't think he's meant to be. Like, if he was wearing mascara and that was a costume choice, then sure. But it seemed like he just, what was going on? It was like he was dressing as Eddie Izzard or something when Eddie Izzard dresses as in man's clothes. It was so odd. Like, it didn't
I think it seemed like that
kid does. I mean, obviously he's playing a character, but it seemed like the person was wearing a costume in the school. Like, it didn't, I don't know.
I also think something, and this I'm sure will change in future episodes, it just had to be the way it was written, is that I feel like it feels more meta. Because basically he only interacted with Ephraim.
Yes.
It was almost like he was
like
a ghost.
Like an imaginary character. Like
they
Tyler
do reference
Zerden
him. They say, oh, he's sitting with Wendell, the weird kid. So it's right. not possible Eventually that he doesn't did. Exist. Yes. But most of the time,
right.
he just comes out of nowhere, just starts talking to Ephraim, leaves.
But that's everyone. That's Chris Pratt, too. That's this show. Like, the kids just appear out of the bathroom
stall.
But
the role that he has, though, is that this wise,
he's like, Puck.
Like, let me
he's
show
like,
up and give you this information and
yes.
then fade back into the
Absolutely.
Bushes.
Absolutely. He's like a little narrator
or a particular purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And frankly, I do not recall Wendell ever transcending that.
poor Wendell.
Which is a shame for poor Wendell. But yeah. So Wendell hooks Ephraim up with as being the pianist, as being a substitute pianist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the ballet dancers.
And what did he say? Because he forced someone to get carpal tunnel?
The way he phrased it, he gave him carpal tunnel.
Who did?
Wendell gave the normal pianist carpal tunnel.
He said that?
Didn't he?
The main pianist is pretending to have carpal tunnel.
Oh, that's what he said.
And in return for something.
Somebody's getting a DVD player out of all this.
Wendell is. That's
so
he
who's
said.
Who's the pianist getting?
I don't, he said, I think he maybe said, he just said he exchanges favors. I don't know if he says what the pianist is getting out of it.
Yeah, that scene does end with Wendell being like, it's too complicated, don't ask.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it makes sense that my wine-addled brain can't follow that. But so Gregory Smith, as Ephraim, becomes the pianist, and here's one thing that I forgot to mention in the pilot episode, but this is like one of the funniest things about the show, I think, is Gregory Smith's really terrible piano hands.
Thank you! Yes.
Like, it is really bad.
Yes.
Like, it's clearly like they tried their best to get him to like be able to like fake like he knows how to play piano, but it is so bad. And in this episode, you can tell they're trying really hard to show as little of that as
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious to me.
I mean, I can't imagine, like, acting that you know how to play the piano has got to be really difficult. There's a reason professional adult actors, like, either have hand replacement, you know what I mean? Like, the people inserting their arms.
Which they do in the show.
Right, I'm just saying, like, there are also actors who, like, Alan Rickman for Truly Madly Deeply learned... He was supposed to play the cello in that. He didn't learn how to do the bow, but he learned how to do the fingering or something like that. So so that it can be more like, oh, this is not completely disjointed.
Right, the hand by his face could act or
right,
whatever.
Right, exactly. And so it's got to be really hard. Like, no, you know,
yeah.
try
Still
not
funny,
to
though.
Shit on it. Yes,
Still funny.
It is definitely funny. I was like,
100%.
The whole time, I'm so glad you said that because every
we've
time.
We've got Brenda Baxworth, the realtor, who also has to be the dancing instructor, and she... So I love when she says, after the one that dancer, so she claps and she says, "I'm clapping as the audience, mm-hmm. not me."
That was my favorite. I loved that so much. That was amazing.
Great line. Oh, and so Amy, after learning that Ephraim is this genius pianist, invites him to a party from which her friends at lunch decide that they have to disinvite him from because he's not cool enough. He's a loser.
I thought so far that that was the most believable teenage interaction that I've
fascinating.
Seen.
Fascinating. Because again, that's another example of where I would be like, haha, let's roll our eyes at everyone's teen drama.
Oh no.
But you were like, no, that's realistic. I buy it.
Oh, so many. I mean, everyone's a shithead when they're a teenager, I think, but like, man.
Except for Wendell.
It's in different ways. And some of the girls I knew growing up, man, oh man, they know how to, they think they're, well, part of it is that they pretend that they're trying to be nice, but they know what they're doing. And that was like totally what was I thought it was acted really well too. These girls that were very pretty and very
smiley.
Oh yes.
We're not going to be mean about it. Not right. to his face.
Yes. Yeah. It was really good. Oh man. Definitely know well, people
glad
like,
you
that.
Like that. Yeah, totally. Yeah. It sucks. It sucks for Ephraim. And he confronts Amy in the middle of dance rehearsal.
Yeah.
Right.
And plie. I have to talk to you.
You can talk all you want. I don't have to listen.
You just let me explain.
Explain what? Why your friends are total bitches? Or why you choose to be friends with them in the first place?
And cambre forward. Straight back. Stretch those arms, ladies. Stretch.
It's not like they were always like that. I've known them forever, and they didn't start out this way, trust me.
So, as the bitchiness emerged, you chose to ignore it and follow along, not unlike the Nazis.
Heels, keep your heels down.
Not everyone's a loner, Ephraim. Some people actually like having friends, even if they're difficult at times.
If you prefer quantity over quality, that's your problem.
That's it. Feel the stretch. Stretch, extend. Good.
Look, I don't agree with what they did. But maybe if you weren't scowling all the time, people wouldn't feel the need to disinvite you places.
You're right. It's my fault. I should take up football and cow tipping. Then your friends would like me, and I'd be the most popular boy in the whole school.
What, Amy, is there a problem?
Yeah, this music is totally messed up. There's nothing to keep time to.
What? It sounds fine to me. He's improving.
Not for me. He's all over the place.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this better? No? No? How about this? What about dead swans in the lake? You don't have a problem with the music, just the loser who's playing it, right?
What just happened?
Oh, is this not good enough for you? Oh, how about dead swans in the lake?
And I don't know. Did you enjoy that part? Because that's the part that I am going to say I thought was stupid.
I liked it because I love.
We like the opposite things.
I love Ephraim and I love that he know. Gets to kind of show off in front of all these.
Yes, but to me, honestly, it relates back to. No, I think kids. And adults show off all the time. That was not the less believable thing. It totally tied into the poor acting with the piano. They told him, hey, piano, really good piano players can talk while they're doing this. But it was so weird. Like
it was awkward.
He was hiding behind the piano it's because weird. He can't play the piano. Yeah. And I'm like, this is not like somebody who would be putting their who's a pianist who has been doing this and is really good would be putting his feeling into the he wouldn't just be giving a speech looking up and like it was so awkward to me like that's that but that's it's fine awkward. Yeah like the concept of it didn't bother me though like
but it is and it's the concept of it as like this, like fantasy scene of essentially you get to kind of like show off and talk back to this girl whose friends disinvited you. Yeah. Right. It is
with
like
what
a
makes
moment
you special.
Right.
Exactly. That's what teenage me loved about it.
Absolutely.
If only I could act so perfectly like brooding and angry and talented in the face of everybody who would embarrass me.
In this room full of hot girls.
In this room full of hot girls.
Yep.
Yeah, no, 100%. But I totally get it. Like it is an awkward like I think that like at some point, I think the creators like acknowledge in maybe some commentary or something how awkward it is. Yeah. This piano playing. It really is like it's.
They should do it in the show. Like eventually, just have it like hands on sticks.
Yeah,
every
like
time.
Those little mini hands, just He has those mini hands on his fingers, mm-hmm. and he's like, doodle-oodle-oo, I'm doing the piano. Doing it. I'm doing the piano.
Doing it.
That's, you know, a reference term. that I never got this reference before because I had never seen the movie before.
Hmm.
The movie Heathers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Says they pulled a Heathers on me.
Yes.
It's fun now to watch this and be like, oh, I get that.
Yes.
That is a great scene, though, where she doesn't feel like going to the party. She instead goes to the diner and finds Edna and Irv.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, though, I have to acknowledge, made me so uncomfortable imagining not only going to a restaurant and playing a board game,
yes.
but playing fucking Monopoly.
And how long have they been
goddamn sitting
Did
there?
Did you hear they said, that's, oh, another round?
Yeah.
I wanted so bad to be like, are you kidding me?
I hate Monopoly, well, first of all, but like, oh.
Okay. Number one, Monopoly is a terrible, horrible,
it's awful,
bullshit game.
Yes.
If Edna's cheating at it, it means right. that the rounds are much shorter.
Sure, sure.
And three, again, it's a testament to like the casual, friendly, neighborly nature
of course.
This town, right. this diner. Mm-hmm. Like they are so comfortable in this town and this diner,
yeah.
they'll play Monopoly there. But yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's unrealistic. It just right. made me uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Me too. I had the exact same thought. Yes.
That's hilarious.
Because like, not even like, are they playing in this restaurant? They can't even eat. Like,
yes.
it's on the whole table. Like, so they're not there eating. We know that. They're just playing a game.
They have French fries.
Irv goes to order
that's
food
true.
For them. They're customers.
They order the cheapest thing on the menu, so stop it. Stop giving them a hard time.
This is a great scene, I think, for Amy, because it shows that she has some self-awareness around, like, her relationship with her friends, but especially for Edna, it's our first thing kind of seeing her in the grandmother role.
Totally, because mm-hmm. at the very beginning, I was like confused, like,
yeah,
how do you know this girl yep. has a birthday party to go to?
Yep.
Because I forgot that it's her granddaughter.
Exactly.
And as soon as they acknowledge that, oh, okay, got yeah. it. They actually have a relationship.
Mm-hmm. I liked that.
Yeah, and Edna like actually comes through with some like, I mean, well, I don't think she even has to say much. I think Amy shares what you know the situation, and she's like, I know what you're going to say. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only time you remind me of your father is when you got a sourpuss on. Spill it, Grover.
My friends, they basically pulled a Heathers on me.
I see. No, I don't. What does that mean?
They uninvited a friend of mine to their party because they don't think he's popular enough. And when I tried to talk to him about it and explain everything, he blew up at me.
Well, his feelings were hurt. That's normal, don't you think?
I didn't want to hurt him. But they've been my friends since second grade. What was I supposed to do? Never mind. I know. I shouldn't have let them treat him like that.
It's not easy to care about someone when the whole world is telling you not to. You have to live your own life, Amy. Trust your instincts. They're pretty good.
Must be my genes.
That. And a bladder like a yak.
Grandma. But then there's also some great insight into that Edna Irv relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When Edna is like, it's she says it's not easy to care about someone when the whole world is telling you not to.
Yeah. You know?
And she looks in Irv's direction.
Mm-hmm.
We get a shot of him. And I think that, again, that's some nice texture of like some insight into their relationship and their history and mm-hmm. relationship to the town. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Definitely is.
And then their last scene, Amy tells Ephraim, you know, you scare me, Ephraim. And there's the classic little, like, you know, at first, yes, I wanted to be friends with you for the wrong reasons, but it turns out you're actually really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cut me some slack because I'm not used to this. And, you know, that's a nice little, you know, Ephraim, I think, is able to give a little smile, a rare smile.
Yeah.
In that interaction. But that's our Amy Ephraim stuff in this episode, I think. Unless you guys remember anything else.
Get a great line to the donut stoner about using Anse's chocolate sprinkles.
Yes, that was good. I like that one. I liked that donut stoner, dude. It was great.
And, yeah, Ephraim gets an egg whisk.
Yeah.
And so then the other storyline in this episode is Delia and
yep.
Megilla.
Mm-hmm.
Megilla is a boy at school who is kind of bullying Delia in these particular ways. Mm-hmm. It's kind of me taking her cookie, taking her jacket, taking her bookmark.
Mm-hmm.
KT noticed right away that first scene he had no lunch.
Yep. Obviously he has issues.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Good catch.
That was what I said that out loud, right?
I was like, give him your cookie. He has no lunch, or share it with him or whatever.
Yeah, I said share with him. He has no lunch. He obviously has problems. Like, I mean, he's wearing the skull necklace and what is he? Eight? Like,
was it a skull?
It was a skull. Yes. I wasn't able to see the skull. And I like that, you know, I think that this girl is a cute little character and she's smart. I didn't like that she was such a victim for too long of the episode. I think they had to stretch it out too long or something, because like she was just too much of a victim the whole time. She's too smart, too self-assured, too much of that, one of those kids that's like a grown-up inside, to just like be like, I don't know what to do. This kid's just taking my stuff.
Right, especially because of the way she stood up to the teacher in just the previous episode.
Like, why? Like, this little turd is, you know, she was, and she's, because she's trying to make friends, but she knows he's a dick. Like, she's not like, I'm going to make friends and he's going to take the cookie and he's going to be fine. Like, I don't think that, I don't know. It was a little weird, but I think it's just because they were trying to fill an episode of TV.
They have to have an arc to it.
Right.
They have to have an opportunity for her to, you know, connect with Ephraim, right? If the title is Friendly Fire and they're all struggling with how to make friends.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you know, when Ephraim gets a phone call from Wendell, you know, Delia's like, you should be happy you made a friend. And it's a good opportunity there for Ephraim to show that he's a good brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When he kind of picks up on the subtext there and is like, what is that supposed to mean?
Yeah.
And tries to help her out, give advice, and give her a yo-yo to play with.
Because he's washing the cum out of his sheets again.
I want to know what's going on.
One more time, washing the cum out of his sheets.
Ew, gross. What?
That's what he... Wasn't that what his dad was joking about?
It was a callback to the pilot episode
when he had a wet dream.
What did he say? What did he say when he was doing the laundry this time?
He's washing some sheets and does Andy say something like, "Oh, you're washing a lot of sheets these days," or something? And Ephraim says something dismissive. And Andy is like, it's like, I was once a youthful sack of hormones myself.
Oh yes,
and,
okay.
And Ephraim says, gross. Find another sack to share with.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
I must have missed that, because what I was perceiving that as, I think it was the half bottle of wine I drank. But when I was watching that, I was just thinking of it as always helping out around the house more. Like, because he's more willingly like, oh, this is my, I was just watching
maybe
it like that.
Maybe that is
and
what
I
he was doing.
Missed,
I don't know.
Right. I was just kind of
definitely washing
that.
Off some cum stains.
I didn't enter the scene thinking that. Like,
Everwood can be very subtle.
Whoa.
I hear you. Like, Delia, we've gotten to know her as this really spunky, assertive kid. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the part of me that like is always going to be defensive of the show. Mm-hmm. Is like, well, we've got to give that character room to be not always perfect, right? Sure. And not always like already like ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has had this run-in with her teacher. She's feeling a lot of vulnerability. She had this teacher's meeting where her father like seemed to kind of yell at her teacher. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure felt like a victory for Andy. But if they didn't talk about it after that, mm-hmm. like, I bet she's feeling kind of like, oh no, like now my dad's mad at my teacher. My mm-hmm. teacher's mad at my dad. Like, I could understand that kind of putting her, like, again, the show doesn't explicitly
frame
her mm-hmm. behavior in this episode in relation to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's me kind of doing that extra lifting. But you know, it's a child struggling with, you know, being bullied at school.
Right. And I liked the way they handled it, that she finally just like stole something right back. I just wish they did it earlier and they, I don't know, filled in some other scene with some other storyline, because I just felt she, that little girl had to act with too many like puppy dog eyes in this episode. I was just
a lot of puppy dog eyes.
Yeah. It was a lot of that.
Hurt little girl eyes.
Yeah. And I was like, she's too cool to be like, you know,
it's kind of funny when Ephraim and Andy are trying to like help her out with the problem, and Andy's like, you know, you can't just keep giving away things to me.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, then why, how come you don't charge your patients?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
And he doesn't answer the question.
Yeah, he doesn't answer the question.
There's also, so there's actually, there's no closing narration from Irv in this episode. I don't think it's an uh-oh. I think it's just like the show is demonstrating, like, look, we're not always going to be relying on a formula. Like, there's some flexibility around it.
Yeah, I like that kind of downer ending, too. It was interesting.
It was, yeah.
Well, yeah, what was the downer ending?
He was saying maybe that kid will be luckier than you are, or were.
Oh, yeah.
That was really good. Yeah.
There was a shout out to my, not my alma mater, because I didn't graduate from there. I dropped out. But CU Boulder, Nina's surrogate, the mother that she's being a surrogate for is a professor at the university in Boulder. That's kind of cool. Kind of cool for me to be reminded of my own personal failures.
I'm telling you, I think my takeaway this week is going to be going and researching like the history of how surrogacy just as a concept was received back then, because I kept thinking like it was enough, I think, that the person who needed a surrogate was an older woman, because that still that itself does still cause controversy, because
older it is parents, true. Period.
Well, older parents, but especially an older parent that old, because like Ephraim said, she'll be dead when he's still this baby is still
dead anyway. Right. Yeah. But more likely
will be dead. I mean, yes, we have great advances in medical science and stuff, and we're supposed to live longer, but a hell of a lot of people die young, and she's 55. I mean, I do not, I think everyone should be able to have a child who wants a child, but I just think that it's interesting that they didn't just like more focus on that instead of just have that be like a part of it. I'm curious. It just, again, it's driving my curiosity. I'm totally going to look into that.
I think they had to ramp up to it. First, it's like, and the reaction of the townspeople when it's just surrogacy is like, oh, Nina must need the money. You know, and there's not really a moral like opposition to it until like,
wait, is that really what the progression was? Because I know that she was pregnant and then.
Yeah, they were baffled. It was in voice by the realtor.
They just didn't know she would be a surrogate.
When she came in nosy to the doctor's office and was like, we got to help her.
Yeah.
We have to do a fundraiser. No, a double fundraiser.
Yeah.
She needs our help. Like, this is a bad thing.
Is implying that would never do it. Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then they started to tip her $80. And then she was like, no, I'm just doing this because my friend needs it. And they're like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because my friend needs it. And then, like, that's why I want to look into it. Because
when it was just someone's
choice,
like, it wasn't about, they were just feeling bad for her. Because, again, they felt like she didn't have a choice to do it. Yeah. And they were like, oh, she did. And she just was choosing to be a part of this thing that we don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
Then they're like, oh, we don't like that. And then he gave his hero speech, and we're going to clap for that. Okay, great. We're suddenly convinced. If that's only that's how it would work. Treat Williams needs to start giving more first speeches, not second speeches.
Yeah, no more speeches than one.
Yeah, in the 2020 COVID-19 reunion of Everwood. I think we joked about this. I don't know if we recorded it, but doctors.
Oh, convincing people to wear masks or not or whatever. Yeah.
But also giving a speech against Trump and Mitch McConnell and shit. That would be great.
Jesus.
This just got too real. This has been Everwood, Never Wouldn't.
Wait, I didn't get my 5 stars.
Oh. I am on
everyone.
Oh, yeah, he's insisting.
All right, so for the pre-watching, definitely 5 stars, because we decided to do another one right after, and it's now almost 1 a.m., so obviously 5 stars, or else we wouldn't have done it. During
3.
This surrogacy 3. Confusion definitely
really
took
me
out
me
of it for the first half. I'm going to say 3 for the first half.
That was mine. I didn't mean for you to say 3.
The scene in the boat brought me back up to
that
5.
That was great. Yes. I really liked that. I liked the interaction with the older man. I can't remember his name.
Walter, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I liked that.
Sea breeze.
The sea breeze. That's
so
awesome.
Good.
With and the key, huh?
Yes,
with the little,
key.
Yep.
The lock just breaks anyway.
So perfect.
So good. good. Mm-hmm. And then the guy like doesn't even seem to know that there's an
itch. Well, he clearly has no self-awareness. He comes in and sits at his table and starts eating his pizza.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, is he kind of dotty or is he just like small town? We all just use the same everything. Everything's communal. We're all friends.
He's another member of the town that I'm sure Dr. Abbott feels particular way about.
Yeah.
The people who had every attribute of dogs except boys.
All right, and then post watch 5 stars, guys.
Yeah, always.
2.5 for each of you.
Hate you.
I'm not going to make you do that, KT, unless you want to.
Oh.
No, you are not doing it. I'm doing it.
I think it's mine. 5s across the board.
Yeah, of course. I think it was 5 for me before. I was a little worried because I know you have to go to bed and get up, and I do too, and do school stuff.
So you were
and
then, distracted by that.
Yeah. So I don't even know if I can have a rating because I just was preparing.
Just give it a 2. That's fine. You can give it a 2.
No, because I was the one that was going to give the episode watching a 3, and then you took my 3. What do I do now? I don't have a 3.
You're not doing it. I'm doing it.
No, but definitely I have 5 for watching the next one. That's what I'll say.
You're already giving a 5 in anticipation of episode 4?
Yeah. I'm into the show. It's cool. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, what's it called?
Episode 4 is called The Kissing Bridge. The original title before notes from the
episode
WB
4 extended.
It was called The Sucking and Fucking Bridge. Well, weirdly, I will say this is more it's less a joke than you know.
Oh, wow.
5 stars. 5 stars. 5 stars.
Groundbreaking show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody. This has been episode 3 of Ever Would, Never Wouldn't, featuring me, Adam Lawver, and my friends,
Eric,
Katie.
Watching and discussing season 1 of Everwood. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you Boulder.
Theoretically.